Italians to play dodgeball, but all that video does is bring back bad memories of high school for me. So, I don't know about you guys. But welcome to Crossroads. I'm Erica. I'm a worship leader around here. I'm so glad that you guys are here. No matter where you're coming from, what you believe about God, you are in the right place. And I'm glad you're here with us. We're going to sing some songs together right now. We believe that these songs are good for us to sing because we just tell God who He is and what He's done for us. And that's good for us to do. So why don't you guys stand up and let's sing together.
There's a longing deep inside for us. So I just want us to take a second to just consider these lyrics that we're singing. So this, the chorus says, "You are Lord of all. I follow where you lead. I lay at your feet. You can have all of me." So for those of us who have said, "Jesus, I'll follow you," that's our pledge of allegiance. You're Lord of all. What's that saying? It's saying that anything in my life, anything, my wife, my kids, my job, my talents, none of those things are above you. The throne of my life is occupied by you, Jesus. And I'll say for myself that this sentiment, these lyrics, are oftentimes more aspirational than truth. Because the reality is, I'm a pretty selfish, rebellious guy. I tend to like the world to be right here, revolving this way. And that doesn't really bode well if I'm saying, "You are Lord of all." Because who's the Lord of my life in that situation? Me. And when that becomes apparent to me, there's only one thing I can do. And it's awkward and sometimes humiliating. But it's what the song says. It's that I have to lay down. Kneel down. Get low. This is really awkward and it's really uncomfortable. But this is the posture I have to take. And so I just want to throw out for all of us. Every one of us suffers from this. There is some aspect of our life that we have given over the throne to. And as I am sort of physically kneeling in here, I want you to just examine your heart. And in your heart, what is it that you might have placed in the throne of your life that Jesus should be sitting on? So picture that thing. And it's sort of our pledge of allegiance going, we really want you there. We're going to sing this again with that thing in our mind. Let's sort of put it down really low and sing this again. Say for myself right now that that is the truth I hold to. You are worthy of it all. You're above all things. And the things in my life that I have given your throne over to, I want you there. Put yourself in your rightful place. And for all of us here, those places in our hearts that we've identified, just give us the resilience, the courage, the things that we need to put them in their proper place. And I'll just say for myself, I love you and I want to follow you. Amen. Oh, guys, that hurts. Thanks so much for singing. What I'd love for you to do is maybe identify a person you don't know, shake a hand, have a seat. And if you're watching on a screen, find someone around you to shake a hand and have a seat with.
Hey guys, welcome to Crossroads. My name's Matt. I'm the campus pastor of Crossroads Anywhere. And if you have ever wondered When is a good time for me to start telling my friends and my family, my coworkers, my neighbors about Crossroads and inviting them into this thing that I'm experiencing? It's now. These next few weeks are going to be epic, and you're not going to want to get to the end of them having experienced what you're going to experience and think, shoot, I should have invited people in. So let me tell you about this. Next weekend is Super Bowl. Super Bowl is an incredible event around here. We do one time a year a very special service where we go all in on the football thing. Like any good Super Bowl event, there's a good amount of trash talking. We make original commercials that are hilarious. There's also really inspiring teaching and great worship. Live competitions, the whole deal. You can find out all about Super Bowl at crossroads.net/Super Bowl. Sites that you can go to experience Super Bowl for the first time ever this year. We're doing a Super Bowl service in Columbus. So if you know people in Columbus, you used to live in Columbus, your old friend lives in Columbus, get them to this page so they know that this is happening, because it's going to be incredible and special service time. So if you're watching online or you want to send this to friends and family online, share it on Facebook, there are special service times all weekend long to make it really easy to attend Super Bowl. And the very next weekend is the start of our I Am journey. This is going to be an incredible 6-week journey where we discover who we are and how we were made, the gifts that we have and our purpose in the world. And we all carry around a lot of baggage about who we are. So we want to drop the baggage and walk confidently in who God made us to be. And no matter what you believe about any of those things, we're going to be able to go on a journey together to ask questions and discover who we are. And we do that through some of the most incredible weekends we'll experience all year long. We pour tons of creativity and investment into these things. We also create an app where you can go through an individual journey that tracks along with the weekends, and all of us get into groups. So we get into groups because when we do that, share our life together and talk about the things we're learning, that's really where we grow. And so the big to-do around the I Am journey is to get in a group. You can go to crossroads.net/IAMJourney. Search for a group in your area, and if you don't find one, start one. You don't have to have ever led a group before, but you can apply to be a group leader. We'll walk you through the process, and we have a ton of resources to really guide you through and make this as easy as possible for you. And we're excited to have groups available really in every state, in every city where you are. We want there to be community that you can be a part of to go through the journey together. And all of these things are made possible because we're a team of people around Crossroads. We have a special team moment this weekend that we get to do. We get to take communion together. A little later in the service, we're gonna have an opportunity to do that. So even now, if you want to, you can go grab any kind of like crackers, soda, it could be water, wine, bread, whatever it might be, something to eat and drink, because in a little bit, we'll invite you to take communion along with us, and you can do that right where you are, wherever you are. You know, there's a team of people that make all of these things happen, people who give to fund all of these experiences. And we do that. I do that. It's a privilege for me to give sacrificially because I want to create experiences like Super Bowl, like journeys, things that for me have changed my life in the past, and I want other people to be able to experience them. And if you want to give, you can go to crossroads.net/give and set up a reoccurring gift. Join that team or a one-time gift. And if you're brand new, no sweat, no pressure to participate in this. We're excited to create experiences like this and make this happen. So while we do that, we're gonna take a look at a preview of the I Am journey.
You have been designed. Dreamed up by an artist. He formed you with his hands, put his breath inside of your lungs. He knows you and has created you for greatness.
Hey Crossroads family, this is Chuck. I was supposed to be speaking this weekend, but the norovirus that's been running through my family, I thought I dodged a bullet, but apparently not. So Brian's gonna step in, I'm sure he's gonna do a great job. I'm also sure at some point he'll use this to make a point that I'm not resilient enough, but I'll fix that next weekend for the Super Bowl of preaching. So I'll see you guys then. Take care.
I'm Chuck Mingo. I'm hurting so bad. I can't even lean up to make a video. I'm not resilient enough to talk about resilience. Hey, welcome to Crossroads, everybody, today. My name is Brian Tome, making fun of my good friend, Chuck Mingo, who's our campus pastor at Oakley and also bears a bit of the teaching load around here. And it's really great to be with you today. We're finishing off a series on resiliency. And we're also going to finish off one of the looks at studies of a guy who's one of my favorite guys in the Bible. His name is Joseph, not Joseph of Christmas and Mother Mary fame, but Joseph of Old Testament fame. And just to recap, if you haven't been here, just to catch you up today, this is a guy who just has amazing resiliency in his life. He starts out in life having this crazy dream about he's up and he's standing tall and his brothers are down bowing before him. And he tells them this. He kind of gloats about it. And they say, oh, yeah, well, we don't like you. And they end up throwing him in a pit. And then they end up sending him into slavery. He gets into slavery. He has all kind of awful stuff happen there. He's accused of being a sexual predator, which is wrong. He goes to jail for a long time. It is wrong being a sexual predator, but he's not actually a sexual predator. It's a false accusation. So False accusation. And he then gets thrown into jail, and then in jail he interprets dreams for a couple guys, and they forget about him, and then Pharaoh finds out he's able to interpret dreams, the most powerful guy in the known world, the head of Egypt, and he calls up Joseph to interpret his dream, and Joseph said, your dream means you're going to have 7 years of crazy great economy and then 7 years of utter collapse and ruin. You better get ready for it. And Pharaoh actually appoints him to be the COO in charge of all this stuff. And where we left off last week, is that Joseph was standing while his brothers came, not knowing who he was, and they bowed down to beg for grain, and Joseph remembered his dream. And we're going to pick that up and go further and talk about what it means to have energy for resiliency. Let's pray right now. God, I thank you that you are a God that has endless amounts of energy. You have endless amounts of love, and I believe that you want the most and the best for us, which means I know that you want us to sense your love and to operate in love and to have your energy and power coursing through our lives in every sector of our life. So help me to be helpful today, God. May your truth be revealed through whatever I have prepared today, and most importantly, may you be honored. And I pray these things according to the character and identity of Jesus. Amen. You know, 2016 was a very difficult year for a lot of us. 2016 was actually a pretty good year for me. However, the beginning of 2016 was an awful, awful time for me because I was recovering from the year 2015. If I have to go all the way back to 2015 to help you understand a big heart for my message, I'm going to do that right now. Here's what happened to me in 2015. I had just come off a massive back-to-back effort of what we were doing here at Crossroads. We just came off of a campaign where we're still in a campaign. It's called the I'm In campaign, where people who are part of Crossroads, who are in at Crossroads, are giving above and beyond what we regularly give for 3 years to make room or space for people to hear about God in a language they understand, in order to have a digital infrastructure to reach people all over the place, in order to have bathrooms and educational facilities for kids that we feed and educate in third world countries, entrepreneurial centers that we're trying to build to enable people who are not being able to fund their own life because they can't find a job to actually start something, and just crazy, crazy stuff like this. And there was an amazing, amazing burden on doing that, huge and massive, not just in having 30 meetings at night at my house. Sometimes I get freaked out about having like a meeting a month. I had like 30 nights in a row at my house. Like people, 30, 40 people in my house for 30 nights in a row. It's having all your normal work and then layered on top of that, planning and strategy meetings. It's the emotional weight, the spiritual drainage that thinks, okay, if this doesn't go well, people literally will die around the world. It's the emotional and spiritual weight of recognizing there's eternity that's at stake in people's lives, and if we're not generous enough, there's going to be just awful eternal consequences. It is the it was just ongoing. It was brutal and it was relentless doing that campaign. Then right when it was over, then went into a waited.
Awaited is a show we did that year. We had 88,000 people show up at the show. There was 30 shows. I think I did all of them except for one of them. And it seems like not that big of a deal. I mean, oh, there's a Christmas show. You're on stage for a few minutes. Big deal. It is a big deal. It's like Groundhog Day. Remember the old movie Groundhog Day? Ned Ryerson! It's like it keeps going on and on and on. And in order to be in a room with 3,500 people, you have to bring your fullness. You have to bring a big version of you. You have to be a bit jacked up. In fact, I am very drained when I walk away from a room full of 2,000 people, way more than 200, because you have to project more. You actually have increased adrenaline that's coursing through your body to be able to try to engage a crowd and just kind of survive. And then when that's over, it's like the system just starts shutting down. I know it's hard to understand because I don't understand your life, and I know the things that you're wrestling with. I can't understand because I've never been through it. Just trust me, to have gone through that run was really difficult. I think just about anybody would have found that difficult. And what that meant for me was then come in January, February, March, and a little bit, January, February, March of 2016, I was worn slap out. And I had no resiliency. I had no energy at all. I was just, I guess I had some resiliency because I was showing up for work still. So I guess I had some resiliency. But here's what that looked like. It looked like at the end of every day, can't wait to get home. I'm not normally like that. It looked like at the end of preaching on the weekend, whereas right now I get done on the end of the weekend, I go, oh man, that was a lot of work, but man, that was fulfilling. Gosh, God, thank you so much for allowing me to be part of that. It meant at that point, getting off stage and going immediately, oh my gosh, I got to do this whole thing over again. It meant not being focused. It meant having temptations that I haven't had for a long, long time because I'm just trying to find something to make me feel good. All kind, just crazy stuff. And right around that time, I read for, I don't know how many times I've read this verse, but it really spoke to me in a profound way. It's what Jesus said when he says this: "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." Love the Lord your God, love him with all your might, with all your energy, with all your resiliency. Love your neighbor as yourself. And how do you do that? He says, he identifies four sectors. There's more than this, but there's four here. It says, love him with your strength. What's that mean? Man, you just love, physically engaged. Love God, love other people, physically engaged. Shovel their sidewalk for them or do whatever you can do for them. Love them with your strength. Don't understand that. Love them with your mind. What's that mean? I don't know. Think nice thoughts about them. Use creative thoughts in your mind to send nice creative notes. Love people with your mind, all different kind of ways. And then love with your heart, love with your soul. What exactly does that mean? I don't know exactly what that means. I don't know exactly what any of this means, but here's what it means. It means when you're tired, it's not as simple as your muscles are tired from a run. It's not as simple as you've been concentrating on studying for the test and now you're tired. It means there's aspects of your humanity that will wear out. There's aspects of your humanity that you will lose energy on and you will not be able to be resilient with. You only have so much energy. You can manage your energy, and you can also build your energy, but you have to be aware of your energy. Some time ago, I went to the doctor for, I don't know, I can't remember what ailment it was, but he wanted to give me pain meds, and he says, oh, well, I'm going to give you some pain meds. Like, no, thank you, doctor. I got a real high pain hole threshold. I don't need any meds, and no, I'm fine. He said, no, you need them. I said, no, seriously, I really have a high pain tolerance. I'll be all right. And then he explained to me, he said, Brian, your body only has so much energy. So you can have your body's energy dealing with the pain that you feel, or you can have your body's energy healing what needs to be healed. Your energy is going to go one of those ways. Dealing with the pain, or healing and recovering what is hurt in your body. I was like, dang, okay, I'll take my pain meds. I'll take this. This is the way it is with you. You only have so much energy to spend on something. And I want us to consider today that at the end of Joseph's life, the number one thing that he is known for, the thing that marks his life, is he is an amazing forgiver. And the forgiveness that you operate in will determine how much resiliency you have. I've given you equations over the last few days, last couple weeks. I'm going to give you another one. Here it is. E plus A plus R plus N equals resiliency. Exercise, attitude, rest, and nutrition. These are the four variables you have to monitor and build your body's energy. Exercise. You increase your cardiovascular abilities, you're going to be able to go longer. All right, we understand that. Rest. If you're not sleeping adequate amount of times, you're going to wind down and not be focused at the end of the day. Nutrition. If you're not eating the right things, it doesn't matter how you're working out, your body can't replenish itself. We probably all know about these things, exercise, rest, and nutrition. But one of the things we probably haven't given a lot of thought to is the role of attitude. You choose your attitude, and your attitude will dictate how much energy, how much resiliency you have. So you have specific some choices you can make. You can make a choice to have a positive attitude or a negative attitude. Whatever choice you make is going to impact something. If you choose to have a negative attitude, that's going to lead to certain things like bitterness. If you choose to have a positive attitude, that's going to lead to certain things like forgiveness. If you choose to have an attitude of bitterness, that's going to cause you then to have resentment. If you have forgiveness, it's going to cause you to have an attitude of love towards other people. And these things, how you diverge here, will dictate how much energy you have for your life. Because here's the thing. You can either choose to spend energy on how people have screwed you over. You can choose to spend energy on how somebody should have done this, Y, or Z. Or you can choose to spend energy thinking about something that's going to make your life better. You can choose thinking about a person who hurt you, or you can choose thinking about a God who loves you. You can't think about both of those things at the same time. It's one or it's the other. And your attitude will determine the energy that you have. It's part of the determiners of the energy you have and the resiliency that you will have inside of your future. And so when I understood this, I'm like, okay, my gosh, this is an energy thing here, and I've got to just sort of let my body recover, and all that stuff has got to just kind of just come together. And one of the things I did is, okay, how am I doing loving other people? Is there something I'm bitter about? Is there something I'm frustrated about? In fact, our executive pastor came to me in March of 2016. He said, "Man, I got to tell you, I'm kind of looking forward for you to go away for the summer because you're really draining people around here right now." What's happening? My lack of resilience, my lack of energy was then infiltrating and dinging other people. And this is the way it works for you. You have got to learn to be a great forgiver. And the problem is we have a country and a culture that's increasingly not very good at offering forgiveness and getting over hurts and getting we've all got things in our past that we remember that bother us, don't we? I do. I used to collect baseball cards, used to love it, and the key goal I had growing up in Pittsburgh was to collect every single Pittsburgh Pirate in the baseball card series every single year. And I had some friends that we would trade cards with, and one day we all got together, and I was so happy because I just like collected all the cards. I'd bought all the packs of cards, and it had this stupid little stick of gum inside of these things. It was awful, nasty. It was like chewing cardboard. It was awful. But I got them all. I was the first one who got all of them. And then one day we got together, like my rubber banded set of the Pittsburgh Pirates just vanished. It was gone. And I was like, and I thought through the process, it's that guy, that it had to be. Confronted him, he's like, "No, I knew it was him. I still know it's Matt Chesnikowski. I still know it's Matt Chesnikowski. Graduated from Franklin Regional in 1983. Peach, I know it's you. And if you're watching Crossroads, because you're part of Crossroads anywhere, God will deal with you in good time." Now, I do know it was him. And, you know, he never asked me for forgiveness. But I gave it to him a long time ago. Because to think about it and be bitter about it and is to drain my energy. It's to take things away. I've had so many people and so many things that I've had to wrestle with it. Cancerous staff members who hurt me, hurt other people, and like I was like, okay, I've got to move on. Banks who we've had mortgages with, not our current lender, Wesleyan Investment Foundation, who is amazing, amazing, but of some of the banks we've had for a mortgage, some of them, not all of them, some of them, awful, like weird stuff, like walking into a closing and knowing we were up against a pinch and one bank just saying, yeah, you know, we're going to change the rate. I know that's what we agree on, but no, we're going to change the rate. We're going to increase the rate by a couple percent. I had to forgive and move beyond that because I would love to tell you the name of that bank right now and tell you you should actually take your money out of that bank. That bank, in case you're wondering, that bank is, I'm not going to do that. To move by that because I can choose to be bitter or I can choose to forgive and go to a new place. This is what marriage is, man. You can either spend your energy in your marriage loving the person and thinking of a new day or spend your energy convincing them that they're wrong. Spend your energy remembering how they faulted you, or spend your energy remembering the bad decisions and making them. You've got to forgive. You've got to move on, or else your marriage can't have any energy to go forward. You can't be upset about your professor. You can't be upset that, oh, no, the professor didn't tell me this. Because guess what? The more you're upset you are with the professor, the less energy you have to study and to build your future. You understand what I'm saying here? I think Joseph wrestled with forgiveness because for him to get to where he was, he had a level of energy that was pretty impressive. Genesis 42, let's see what happens and pick up the story. Now, Joseph was governor over the land. He was the one who sold to the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. And Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he treated them like strangers. And he spoke roughly to them. "Where do you come from?" he said. Well, they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." And Joseph recognized his brothers, and they did not recognize him. And Joseph remembered the dreams that he had dreamed of them. And he said to them, "You're spies. You've come to see the nakedness of this land." Now, you're going to see in a moment that Jacob is a pretty impressive guy. He's an amazing forgiver. You're going to see that in a moment. But right now, you're also seeing a bit of the difficulty that comes with forgiveness. I believe that he was forgiving. I don't believe he was chewing and being bitter about who his brothers had done. Otherwise, he wouldn't have had the energy to mastermind how to have different cities that were storing grain so that the Egyptians could live and that people from all over the world could come and live and give the Egyptians money and run that system. He did that. And when he's here and these brothers bow down before him, we see that he starts to get angry. He starts to and we see this back and forth with him and his brothers. And the crazy thing is he's in this beautiful vengeance fantasy place where he has the power to do to them what they can't imagine he's going to do them. And here's the other cool thing, if you didn't pick this up, they don't know it's him. Because so much time has gone now that his brothers may have forgotten about him. He's changed his appearance. He's a senior Egyptian now, basically. He's got probably eyeshadow like Egyptians. He's walking like an Egyptian. He doesn't remind them at all of his Jewishness, and they can't pick up it at all. And I believe that he's been on a forgiveness journey for a long time, which gives him the freedom and gives him the energy to fulfill his job. Three things about forgiveness. Number one, forgiveness gives freedom, not answers. Forgiveness gives freedom, not answers. Forgiveness is about you having freedom. Forgiveness is not about letting the other guy go, letting the other guy off. Forgiveness is about you getting freedom, because so long as we are thinking about the things that somebody has done to us, they still own us. So long as we're remembering the injustices that have done to us, we're living in the past, and the past never gets us to the future. The past never gets us to a better place in the future. Freedom comes with forgiveness. Your freedom, not the other person's freedom, maybe their freedom, but primarily yours. Forgiveness for me is one of the most selfish things I do. I gotta tell you, I'm pretty selfish. So when I learned that forgiveness was a way that I keep my energy up, a forgiveness is a way that I identify with God, a forgiveness is a way that I can continue to have my creative powers on my future instead of rehashing my past, it's like, okay, sign me up for it. It's freedom. Now, forgiveness also doesn't give us all the answers. It doesn't tell us, okay, I can forgive this person, but what should their consequences should be? Should there be consequences? It doesn't tell me, okay, I've forgiven this person, but should I still have a relationship with them? Should it be the same kind of relationship? It doesn't tell me, okay, I've forgiven them, but what does that mean about boundaries? What's my boundaries? You should have boundaries with people, especially if they've hurt. There should be some boundaries. I don't know what they are. Forgiveness doesn't give you the specific answer to that. I hope if you forgive somebody who's extorted money from you, you still don't let them balance your bookshelf, your books. I hope that that's the case. But forgiveness won't give us the answer to those things. You've got to figure those out. But what it does tell us is this: if you want freedom, if you want the energy to be resilient in the things that matter, you become a ninja at giving grace, a ninja at doing the right thing. Anne Lamott says this: not to forgive is like drinking deeply of rat poison and expecting the other person to die. It's ridiculous. You can. Your anger towards somebody else never helps you. And yet we have to recognize, friends, right now we live in a culture, in a country that is incredibly angry and incredibly bitter. Maybe this is one of the reasons why our country has a hard time going forward on things. Because we as a country, we can't spend time being angry at everybody and then be frustrated that we're not going forward. It doesn't work that way. We see this all over the place. I'm not just talking about our politics. I'm talking about our entertainment. Have you ever noticed how much of the movies that you and I love and watch, the central theme is revenge? If you're a Quentin Tarantino fan, like every single one is like Kill Bill. Get somebody over. Get deal right. Mean Girls. John Tucker Must Die. Even, my name is... Princess Bride, my name is Inigo Montoya. You kill my father. Prepare to die. That's a vengeance through line throughout the whole movie. The Lion King, even Frozen, is a vengeance through line. Of course, some of the greatest movies, the greatest movies in the history of the world, my opinion, like Rambo, Let It Go. Rambo, The Patriot, Braveheart. These movies are my favorite movies, many of them, and these things have the thing of vengeance. And of course, one of the greatest movies of all time. I'm not saying we should swear off vengeance movies. I'm not saying that necessarily. I'm just saying, friends, hey, let's just look at our art as a reflection of our culture. And we are a bitter, unforgiving people who are unable to go forward and unable to build many things, not as many things as we should. And you can choose who you want to be like. You want to be like those? You want to choose your attitude and be those who hold on and are bitter and have suffer the consequences? Or do you want to have the attitude of honoring God and being like Him, being a forgiver? Number two, forgiveness is simple, not easy. Forgiveness is simple, not easy. It may be simple to do a push-up, right? I mean, it's pretty simple. You just do that. But it's not necessarily easy, especially if you haven't done them for a while. We should never confuse simplicity with ease. Forgiveness is very, very simple. It's simply this: you let it go. Jesus used the word aphemi, which means to release, to let it go. It means that even if somebody doesn't come and ask you forgiveness, you make the choice to let it go, not think about it, not dwell on it. You let it go. It's not easy, but it's simple. Jesus says, love your enemy as yourself. Why would you love your enemy? Because you're praying for them. That's what he says. Pray for your enemies, he says. Pray for your enemies. He didn't say, pray for these people you love. He says, pray for your enemies. Why would you pray for enemies? Because it is not an easy thing to do, but it is a very simple thing to do, and it's a way to start releasing your bitterness and choosing to bless somebody who needs forgiveness, even if they're not asking for it. It's not easy, but it is simple, and you can do, oh, Brian, you don't understand what's happened to me. I know I don't understand what's happened to you. I also understand that there's things. If you haven't been growing in forgiveness, and by the way, you're not going to get this talk unless you go to a church. The rest of society is not giving forgiveness talks. The rest of society is like, you got to pay your debt to society talks. The rest of society is not giving us forgiveness talks. But if you're going to be a forgiver, the place for you to start is not the person who abused you when you were a child, if you're not a forgiveness ninja. If you're not, man, that's not the place for you to start, is to forgive the person who cut in front of you in the line. Forgive the person who took all the credit for the work project. It is not easy, but it is very simple. You just make the choice. Oh, I'm thinking about that. I'm not going to think about that right now. La, 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 la. I'm going to think about something else. I'm going to pray for that person right now. That's where I'm going to go. Genesis 42, then they said to one another, you know, in truth, this is Joseph's brothers, we are guilty concerning our brother in that we saw the distress of his soul when he begged us and did not listen. That is why this distress has come upon us. And Reuben answered them, did I tell you not to sin against this boy? But you did not listen. So now there comes a reckoning for his blood. They did not know that Joseph understood them, for there was an interpreter between them. Then he turned away from them and he wept. He looks like an Egyptian, and he's not letting on to them that he speaks Hebrew. He speaks Hebrew, he speaks Egyptian. They don't know this, so they're talking, not knowing he has any idea. And when he hears that his brothers have actually had a heart for him, or at least they've been thinking about him, he turns away and he weeps. I don't know why that is. Does he feel like, I haven't been forgotten, you have been loving me? Does he feel like, I see that they've actually been in turmoil for these many, many years as well? They've had regrets that they've had. Their family has been ripped apart. Is he turned away and cry because he senses something powerful is going to happen right now? I don't know. All I know is there are complexities with forgiveness. There's complexities with it. And we see him wrestle with this for chapters. Like, he's angry here, and then he pulls back and he's emotional. And this is the way it's like. You can't necessarily just like turn around and say, oh, okay, I don't have any bitterness. Oh, okay, I'm not. You just make the choice. You make the choice that says, I'm choosing to go the way of forgiveness. It's going to be a hard path. It's going to be a difficult one, but that's the way I'm going. This is why Hebrews says in chapter 12, see that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble. So, you can choose the grace of God. That's one attitude. I want the attitude to lie on the grace of God. Or you can choose the bitterness root. This is what bitterness does. It's a root. It goes all throughout our innards. It consumes our energy. It wraps around our mind. It wraps around our emotions. And it goes deeper and deeper. And the more you feed it, the more you think about that event, the more fertilizer you pour onto it, and the more pain and difficulty comes your way. And you and I lose. You and I lose. We think it feels good. It may feel good in the moment because we have a little fantasy, but we never get any further in life. We never have more resiliency. We don't have resiliency to love people. We don't have resiliency to keep taking punches because we've taken a punch and we're still down. We're still down, fixating on it and chewing on it. You choose it. You don't put your energy towards that. Why don't you put your energy toward the things of God and actually have his energy coming towards us? Number three, forgiveness is chosen, not earned. Forgiveness is chosen, not earned. Many of us are not forgivers because somebody who has hurt us has never earned our forgiveness. I can hear you. Well, they haven't earned my forgiveness. No, you don't earn forgiveness. You choose forgiveness. No one does something that thou for you should forgive them unless you want to be in bondage to them. That's the way this works. If you don't forgive them, guess what? You're still in bondage. They still own you because they're controlling your emotions. They're controlling our stomach enzymes. They're controlling our blood pressure. They're controlling our ulcers. They have a hold over us. They don't do something, okay, there you go, I give it. They may someday come and ask forgiveness. I found that rarely ever happens with me. I don't know if that's because maybe they're always right and I'm wrong. I don't know if it's because people think that they haven't hurt me, I don't know if it's because people don't have enough strength or resiliency themselves to come and say, "Hey, I'm so." I don't know. I've given up trying to figure that out. All I know is this: you and I can choose to give forgiveness. But if you're waiting for someone to earn it, you will never forgive, and your energy will be sucked out, and you will not have the kind of resiliency you need to have the life that you want to live. Check out what happens when Joseph's brothers fully understand who Joseph is and what Joseph says. Joseph says, Genesis 50, "As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear, I will provide for you and your little ones." Thus, he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. He says, "I understand you're freaked out," because as soon as they realize this is my brother and he holds all the cards, all the wealth, all the power, he can do to us whatever he wants right now, they start freaking, "Hey, whoa. He says, "I thought about this a lot. I know you guys meant to hurt me, because guess what? God was setting us up for this moment right now. God was setting us up so that you could come and you could have food. Because if I wasn't in the position I was in, there wouldn't be an answer to the solution, and people around the world wouldn't be eating, and you wouldn't be eating it right now anymore." That is, friends, that is unbelievable. The New Testament says God causes all things to work for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. That's in Romans chapter 8. And this is how Joseph is operating. He says, "Man, I feel this. I feel this. I'm operating this way. And I am choosing to look at how God is forming me through this and the positive things in this." This is a huge reconciliation move on his part. Huge reconciliation. One of the huge reconciling heroes I have in my life is Chuck Mingo. Chuck is an amazing racial reconciliation hero. Here's one of Chuck's quotes: "Choosing unforgiveness for every racial slight makes me less potent for the mission God's given me to be a reconciler." Which is why we do Undivided around here, as a way to bring reconciliation and enable forgiveness and understanding to happen. It's why Jesus says in Matthew 6:15, "If you do not forgive others their sins, then your Father will not forgive your sins." Jesus is like saying, "Hey, I want to pull out all the stops right now. I want you to make it really easy to forgive. Here's how I'm going to be so clear with you. This should make it easy. If you want it forgiven by God, you got to forgive other people, or else what happens? God doesn't forgive you, and you go to hell." Jesus says, as Jesus says here, he says, "Let me incentivize you." He says, "How important this is. I don't understand how that works. I'm not sure I don't know." Let's just take Jesus at his face value right now and just take him at his face value words and just understand that when we have a problem with forgiving others, God has a problem with us. And there's blessings that we're not going to get from him, which is why one of our friends from Crossroads, one of his stories about this is so powerful. Check him out.
"My country, we went through civil war around 1990. It ended up being into a genocide in 1994. When these conflicts began, as a young boy, I didn't know what was happening. It was done not by foreign people, but these neighbors fueled to kill neighbors. We had close to 1 million people killed in a time of only 3 months, about 100 days. They came, surrounded the village. They begin to bind people and taking them out to be killed. I felt like a voice telling me, try to run away and die as you are trying to escape. So with the arm tied, I had a cousin nearby and said, let's try to run. So I jumped first, he was following me, other people following, then they began to release bullets. I fell down, fell on top of me, but already shot. Another couple of people were killed and they dragged their bodies, dumping on the other side. I was totally covered with these other bodies. I had to stay there for a long time, but they became like my shield. Nothing would reach me, either grenade or other bullets. when I struggled to come out of this body still with tight arms, and I began to walk until the place where I was able to get help. I survived by God's grace. In this time, I lost 32 family members. I ended up into the streets of a town called Goma. At this time, I was 15, homeless, no money, nobody, no relatives. So I was a street kid. I met this pastor. His name was Pastor Claude. He really welcomed me, spoke to me. After being saved, the pastor gave me a Bible. I began to read. He assigned me, like he gave me assignments of homework to do. And when I was reading Matthew, I reached after the Lord's Prayer. I'm in Matthew chapter 6, verse 15. That was the most troubling verse for me in the entire Bible. That you have to forgive, you don't forgive, your heavenly Father will not forgive you. I was full of hatred. I hated the people responsible for my family. I'm suffering because of them. As a human being, what you can think is about revenge. So that hatred with this verse, I felt it's really not possible. How can you forgive? And if I'm to be called a Christian, forgiveness is not an option, but it's a must. It's not easy, but it's possible. I forgave from the bottom of my heart. Step by step, I became a new person. I found my joy again. I found a purpose of living, because at that time you think, why to live? I've lost everything. After 4 years, I get the opportunity to come back in Rwanda, but we still have ministry around these places. It was obvious for me that God was taking me into the path of being into ministry. I was convinced by the Holy Spirit as a Christian that these people should be together. I've gone back to the place, evangelized to the people, have gotten saved. They are called brothers and sisters in Christ. We pray together, we share life together, we minister together, and we see that as a part of the healing of individual people, but even the community itself. I believe that the biggest theme of any church should be reconciliation, because we live into a broken world. Healing of communities and reconciliation is a process. It's part of the story that we have, but also it's a small portion of the story of Jesus, the bigger story of Jesus.
Isn't that powerful? Come on, that's powerful. Man, it's a beautiful thing. Why would a guy come to be that energetic towards loving people? It's because God came to be energetic towards him and to love him and to forgive him. And he was like, God, I want more of your energy. I want more of your power. I want more of your grace. I want that one. So that means I've got to do the difficult thing of stepping out and releasing bitterness and forgiving people. Joseph is so inspiring to me because Joseph is an early shadow of what Jesus was going to look like. Think about the crazy similarities. Joseph is abandoned by his family. Jesus is abandoned by his family or his friends, his disciples. One of them, specifically Judas, who sells him to go and be tried. What's Judas get as he sells out Jesus? He gets silver. What does Joseph's brothers get? They get silver. Joseph, when he's in jail, he's forgotten, and he's with, inside of jail, two people, a baker and the cupbearer. Jesus is on the cross, and on the cross with two people executed on either side of him. Joseph gives forgiveness to the people who have tormented him. Jesus, when he's on a cross, he says, Father, forgive them who are tormenting me, for they know not what they do. Joseph has all of his pain, all of his difficulty as a thing to bless the masses. Jesus has all of his pain, all of his difficulty on a cross to bless the masses, for whoever would receive Jesus would receive forgiveness, would receive restoration, would receive wholeness. This is why once a series we celebrate communion, which is what we're going to do right now. We're going to celebrate communion. It's the ultimate example of forgiveness, having your energy in the right place. Jesus says this in Matthew chapter 26. During the meal, Jesus took and he blessed the bread. He broke it and gave it to his disciples, said, "Take, eat, this is my body." Taking the cup and thanking God, he gave it to them. "Drink this, all of you, this is my blood, God's new covenant poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins." Jesus says, here we go, I am going to break my body for you. When you get together, break the bread. Remind yourselves that I broke my body for you. And you've never had to break yourself from somebody else. So I ask you to love one another. Break yourself, because I've broken myself for you. He took the cup, poured it out. This signifies my blood, because I'm going to pour out my blood for you. This is for all who want to receive Jesus for the very first time, for those who want to refresh themselves in the energy of God's grace and his forgiveness. Let me just pray for you right now. God, pray that you would bring us a fresh understanding of how you want us to operate. And God, may your pleasure and may your blessings be on your people who want to walk in forgiveness right now. And I pray these things according to the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.
Hey guys, we're going to get a chance to take communion now, which is a pretty meaningful thing, that we could be connected all over the world at the same time participating in communion together. So if you haven't yet, feel free to go grab something to eat, something to drink. It can be anything. It doesn't have to be anything special. Just something that would allow all of us to participate in communion together. And while we do that, we're going to also have a chance to worship and tell God how good he is and how thankful we are for the sacrifice that he's made in our life. Hey guys, it was great to be together this weekend. Next weekend is Super Bowl, and the weekend right after that starts the I Am Journey. So this week, find the people you're going to invite to do Super Bowl with and do the journey with. It's going to be incredible. They're not going to want to miss it. You don't want to miss it either. Have an awesome week, guys.